Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
Your NPR station in Western New York is member-supported WBFO.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
This is What's Next, and this morning we're talking with Lee and Lavina Thomas. They are with Rata Baked Goods. Hi, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
You know, I'm always interested to hear how businesses start, you know, community businesses start. It's always kind of, I think, one of the interesting things about, you know, how, you know, you get to a point, right, in your business growth, but where it all started from. So let's talk about where it started from. Who wants to take this one on, get it started?
So I got my degree from Buff State, my master's in higher education. Okay. And I was in the field of academic advising, helping underrepresented youth from different high schools to basically bridge the gap between high school and college. Me, myself, being a first generation college student, I was able to use my degree on my wife here and to basically, you know, be her academic advisor, you know, just wanted to see what she wanted more out of life, you know, basically just see her artistic ways and her ways of making handmade jewelry. And I'm like, you know, since you're already artistic, you know how to draw, how about baking? You like science, you like math. And in school, we always talked about transferable skills. So I wanted to use that method with her and just see, was that something that she would be interested in? And just took off from there.
What was that like getting, it almost sounds like you're being analyzed by your husband, Lavina.
Yeah, we were drawing graphs and charts and trying to figure out like the common denominators of what you like and how they can all tie to a career. It was an interesting conversation, but I was appreciative of it because prior to that point, like he was expressing, I was one of those people like, I have no clue. I know his business. I know I have a heart for people. I like science. I like crafts, but I don't know where to channel that. Don't know where to place it. So it kind of helped to tie it all together.
Is this the first time that you led somebody to the baking field in your counseling of students and people's professional path?
Yeah.
It was the first one, huh? So then take us to that idea that, okay, you know, I couldn't ever imagine myself opening a baking company. I mean, I just think would be the last person in the world to do something like that. And I can't imagine anyone would. But for you, I know you have maybe a little bit of experience as a youth, but there was no great passion necessarily for baking, right?
So what we really wanted to do was create an avenue and a means to give back to community.
Yeah.
This is just the avenue that we chose to be able to do so, because most people enjoy a cupcake, a cookie, brownies at some point or another, right?
Right.
So we figured that if we could grow this side of the business, which is the bakery itself, then we would have the means to give back in ways that we would like to down the road.
And how do you expand? I looked on your website and it looks like you've got a little bit of everything there.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come across all these different options and such when it comes to things that you're baking?
So I did start my journey with my husband. We started talking to local businesses on like their journey of how they got started.
Okay.
What does it look like for you? Like, we were trying to research in that way. Just connecting with different business owners and talking. From there, I signed up for the Baking and Pastry Arts program. He got me back in college. So that's how I learned the technique behind the baked goods and the science behind it. So once I learned that, I was able to experiment. That's the sciences within me. And the artist within me that enjoys putting different things together. So we have a recipe and I'll flip it and make it something completely different. Like we have a sweet potato brownie.
Really?
Yes. Apple crisp
brownies.
Sweet brownie.
Potato brownies.
Yes. So it's
I
like
think a, you may have just changed my life. I'm sorry.
Go it's on. Like a traditional dessert, but done in a new fun way.
Right, right.
So the sweet potato brownie is based off of sweet potato pie. And then we have a apple crisp one, which is a reimagined apple pie.
Okay.
But it's a brownie.
All right.
So we do fun like flips. My husband sometimes he'll come and he'll be like, "We need to make this. And how do you make this?" And I'm like, "We'll figure it out."
Yep. Because a lot of your business, your I guess for lack of a better term, catering to different events and things along those lines. So some customers must come to you and say, "Can you make so and so?" And I have a feeling you never say no.
No, we like a challenge.
Yeah.
I think the most that we ever did was 950 cupcakes with their brand logo on it for Independent Health.
Wow.
It was for their staff appreciation day.
Okay.
And it took about 2 days to complete. We had a team of four, including ourselves, to basically help us out with that catering order.
2 days.
Mm-hmm. 2 days.
Pretty much around the clock, kept it going pretty much all the day long. Yep.
Basically, if somebody's sleeping, the other person's up.
Oh,
if somebody's taking a nap, it's always somebody's up working.
So, right.
Yeah.
And it worked out well.
It worked out well. And we had to open the next day for the store. So we had to hurry up and go back to the shop, clean up, and just start the grind all over again.
You know, it's interesting, Lavina, when you were talking about, you know, talking to other businesses, what are some of the things that when you remember talking, going around to local businesses here in the city of Buffalo, that they said about what a business is going to be like and what you've now found that, yeah, they were dead straight. What were some of those things?
I know we had a lady speak with us and she said that it is long hours typically for bakers, which when I've researched online with my husband, we found that people would say that it was a common thing that was said. You have to have a love for what you do. Like someone told us that as well. And that shows, like I said, I do enjoy baking. It's a newfound love for me over the last 5 years. But what keeps us there is the fact that we have a passion for community. That was like first and foremost, and then my passion for baking comes second.
Let's explore that just a little bit. We're with Lee and Lavina Thomas of Rattle Baked Goods over on Amherst Street, but let's explore then the community element of things, because you know, before we started taping, that was definitely a common theme of our conversation, all these different types of avenues that you've explored. Let's talk about some of the places that you're ending up, you know, things that you're finding yourself involved in, just to expand on, you know, how far some of this, you know, the community efforts have gone, where, you know, maybe you started off, you're going to help out with something, and then all of a sudden, as they say, sometimes, you know, a volunteer is just somebody waiting who doesn't want to say no, or forgot to say no. So what about that? What are some of the community things that you're doing?
Yes. So we have some partnerships with local organizations, not-for-profits, such as Best Self and CES Buffalo. We have cupcake classes where we do like Saturday academies or a open school event for them. And we also do a couple of STEM and STEM programs for schools that want us to come on campus and teach their students about, you know, fundamentals of baking. And we don't reach probably over the last 2 years, over 2,000 families and children all together. We're going into our third year with Best Self and CES Buffalo. And it means a lot to us knowing that these skills, these skills could really take somebody else up to the next level. I'm looking forward to like 10 plus years from now saying, "Hey, we went to you guys cupcake class and now I'm like one of the top baking and pastry chefs just by going to y'all free event," basically.
Right.
You know, because it's such beneficial to have this type of program cater to underserved communities that don't have certain access to resources, and to have family bonding time at the same time while you're enjoying a sweet, delicious cupcake and just working on fundamentals with their children. We have ages from probably 2 all the way up to our age.
Okay.
You know, and we kind of pitch to that, you know, that the science behind it, the math behind it, and the technology as well, because we do, you know, edible imaging with our catering orders as well. But just as a 2-year-old, you just seeing them working with their motor skills and different, learning different colors and techniques at a young age.
Right.
And then as a company, we've been out helping after the TOPS incident happened. We were out in the community helping to bag food and give it out to the families in that area. We have done hat drives, glove drives, coat drives with partnership with other local establishments. We've donated. We do yearly, there's an event called Save the Tatas. It's in honor of breast cancer awareness. So we do that every year. Just any way that we can possibly, whether it's donating our time or helping to bridge resources or, you know, whatever avenue we can as a small business, we try. When we launched, we gave away school supplies.
Oh, okay.
So that's something that we do as well.
It's interesting that you, so much of your focus is on giving back, like you said, because you know, you guys both grew up in the city of Buffalo. Was there a need maybe when you were coming up through school that maybe that you needed more people? There was a room, there was plenty of room for more people who come in and offer this kind of, for lack of a better term, mentorship, it seems like, right? Was that something that maybe was lacking, would you say?
Maybe not so much lacking, but I know in my family it was always emphasized to be a help where you can be. So like we were raised within a church, and the church is all about giving back and, you know, sharing whatever resources you can with the next person. So I think that's where it stems from for me, is just seeing it be done in front of me and then growing up in that environment. And then,
yeah, and for me, I used to work for the Boys and Girls Club of Buffalo for 7 years. And also, I was a member as well growing up. And me and a colleague, we always took care of our members. We was always going above and beyond for them, coming out of our own pockets. And he was a mentor to me as well. His name is Fred Gilbert. But
oh, that's right. I do know who Fred Gilbert is. That's right.
Frederick Gilbert, he was a mentor to me as well. And we
works
always,
at Buffalo State, right?
Yes,
of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we always took care of the members there. And we felt like things with our business, things was better as a community when you have community support.
Yeah.
And just do the numbers and research that people do, they progress better when they have a better support system.
Right. And are you seeing that then when you offer these classes? Are you seeing that maybe that next great baker? Have you seen those people like you know, who show that sign, that whatever that is, when they take right to it? Have you seen that?
I've seen quite a few children that are like, oh, I know what this is, and they do it, and it's natural to them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, we have to hire you.
Very nice. So now we should talk about your storefront over on Amherst Street, 247 Amherst. It's interesting, like you said, when you came in, what's next? What's next for Rata Baked Goods is, it looks like the storefront, the retail part of the operation is going to be, you're going to cease that for a little while, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So November 1st, we'll be in a transition period where we're not completely closing the doors to the public, because we still want that one-to-one interaction with people that patronize us and, you know, to our loyal customers.
Right.
And we're looking more to grow in different areas of the business, where it's retail, getting into different grocery stores, and focusing more on business to business, such as catering and special events.
Yeah, the business to, I mean, I would think that the business to business type of approach has a huge benefit over maybe having a storefront that you're waiting for, you know, walk-in traffic to come in every day. It's, I guess, for lack of better understanding, you know how much business you have to do on a given day, week, whatever the case may be, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
So with the business of business, it's a little bit more predictable and more manageable when you're looking at your numbers.
Right.
Like you said, when you're waiting, you're just waiting for, you know, random people to come in to patronize you, not knowing if they're going to come or not. But it's fun to do the business of business, because then, you know, you can grow. And we kind of like study different businesses where they doing the same business model, where like the Hunts brothers, they started off as a pizzeria, but then as their children took over, they started to do distributions to different stores and gas stations, and now they got over 10,000 locations with no storefronts. So it's like, if that's working for them for the last 30 years, let's see if we could do that with our bakery and just, you know, be.
How about, when did you know you were on the right track with this? Because it sounds like, you know, I mean, you know, I know your LLC, you filed for it in 2020, but you're here, you made it through COVID, you're still here.
Right.
When did you know that you're on the right track? You felt like this is where you needed to be.
So we've had our storefront now for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to cultivate that traffic, the foot traffic. But through that process, we naturally have had catering and schools booking us, and just that side of the business was starting to pull more and more of our time. And it you can tell when it's like your body, like my husband likes to say, when you're eating the wrong things and it's kind of giving you signs like, okay, you need to change something because it's not working for you. It's not digesting right. So it shows the same way in your business. You just kind of have to listen to what your body is telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've been able to follow the path that way, huh?
Yeah,
intuitively like that. That's interesting. We haven't talked about the name of your business, Rada Baked Goods.
Yes.
What's the background on that?
All right. So my husband was listening to Dr. Miles Monroe. He was giving a sermon, and basically that word was used. So he was interested in it, and he looked it up. It's a Hebrew term that means to have dominion, rule, and power. As we've previously discussed, like, basically we have connection to community, so for us that's what it meant, is to have dominion and rule over community and ways of giving back. So
and so when it comes to your customers, your clients, they come to you, like you said, about the 950 cupcakes from Independent Health. I mean, is that your spirit though? We can do it, we can get anything done.
We have a team of people. We have anybody on payroll yet, but we have like independent contractors, and we basically all a family. And they helped us out with almost every event that we had called them for, including the school events. And we just love the fact that our work and our name is starting to get out there, and people are starting to trust us as an establishment, and more than a bakery, just as a brand itself. Because we hold ourselves to a high accountability and high standard as well. So we just want to put that out there to our community.
So what's the best part of having your own business, or best parts?
I would say, one, working together. Two, giving a platform for our children to see that, to be an example for others who may be looking to do the same. And then also, I would say it's good to be able to put something together yourself, pick your timing for it, do it in a way that is suitable for you and your family.
I would say creativity, everything that my wife just said, and just add creativity and having the chance or opportunity to problem solve. If there's a situation that goes wrong, what can we do to make it, you know, make it better? And just being the face of our community as well, and just having, you know, that representation, you know, seeing that, you know, person of color, that, okay, they can do this, they can upheld this, they're on the right track. Even though behind the scenes, everything glitter ain't gold.
Right.
We definitely.
So you beat me my next question. What's the worst part of Helen and your balance? But to it though, there's a balance there of the reality. But at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Yeah, this is my newfound passion.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something with my degree where I was working with student athletes and NFL, things of that nature, and when I found that my wife had a natural gift. And I'm like, you know, let me jump on her bad wagon and just learn a new skill.
Right. See, we also still found a way to bridge it to his skill set because we work with the Mayor Summer Youth Program. Mm-hmm. We just did our second summer. And what we like about the program is that you usually get like that high school age children. So we usually help them. Like, we've had a couple of students who were like me. I don't know what I want to do.
Sure.
So in those ways, we're able to like, what are you passionate about? Like, what are you interested in? What do you like? We've helped a young lady transition from high school to college, and she's still with us. She's one of our independent contractors. We love her. And basically, my husband was able to help her sort through, like, what school do you want to go to? Okay, well, let's take you to visit. Like you said, he knows some of the advisors at Buff State. He's connected to Canisius College. If he didn't go to the school, he worked in it. So he has connections with all the different colleges. And that's why we also say we're more than a bakery, because we were able to take her, like, basically how they do in high school, where you have all the colleges lined up in front of you, but we're having her visit different ones and talking to them about their majors and their processes and how do you enroll. And basically, we were able to help her figure that out. Yeah. So that felt good.
We like pouring back into people that pour into us, especially if they doing long nights. It doesn't matter what you do for Rida. We say once you either buy from us, help us, volunteer, whatever, you're part of the Rida family. That's what we call everybody, the Rida family. And we just love pouring back into people because we know that it's hard to find that community, that support. And especially if you have a household or the community that doesn't know the resources that you're trying to reach to. And if we have the resources, if it's not monetary gifts, you know, if it's just knowledge and wisdom, we want to use that to give back as well.
And if somebody wanted to find out more about Rida Baked Goods, what do they do?
So we have our website, www.ridabakes.com.
Okay.
It has
Rida spelled A-R-D-A-H, right?
Yep. Rida, R-A-D-A-H. Yep. And then it has all of our contact information, our social medias, and then pretty soon it'll have other avenues in which people can find our products as well.
Mm-hmm. And what do they call it? The elevator speech, right? Yeah. If you got 30 seconds on an elevator, what are you telling them about Rida?
Go.
Oh, man. Rida Baked Goods is a renowned bakery that loves to pour back in our community, not only with delicious treats, but with a community support that focus on growth and development in different areas of Buffalo. And we would love for you guys to be part of the Rida family.
There we go. All right. Excellent. Well, Lee and Lavina Thomas, thanks very much for being with us on What's Next.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
Stay with us on What's Next. Coming up, a conversation with former Erie County legislator Howard Johnson, who's currently now with the Erie County Board of Elections. This is WBFO.
Celebrate the 50th anniversary season of Austin City Limits. Don't miss remarkable performances from Gary Clark Jr., Black Pumas, Brittany Howard, and more. Watch every Monday at 10 p.m. on WNED PBS.
Watch the best of Western New York high school football every Friday night at 7 p.m. Catch the games every week on Create on Spectrum Channel 1275.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Klein Hand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. And today we're going to talk about an issue that I think is on everybody's minds, and that is elections. We're very fortunate to have with us live in studio today Howard Johnson, the Deputy Commissioner for the Erie County Board of Elections. In with us live, taking time out from a very busy schedule.
Yes.
Mr. Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, it's great to have you and to kind of get into things. Before we talk about what could happen and even what's happening right now with early voting, and it is unbelievable how many people are going out for early voting. Mm-hmm. But just talk about you. I know you joined the board back in the midsummer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, July.
July. The preparation that goes into getting ready for this time of the year, which of course is obviously your busiest time of the year.
Yeah, so it's a lot of preparation that goes into it. We have the recalibration of the machines to ensure that over 1,000 machines, we're ensuring that they're up, ready to go, that there's no glitches with them, ensuring that, you know, everything's in place, setting up our command center to ensure that we have boots on the ground ready to address any issues and concerns that may be out there during the election process. And, you know, getting the election inspectors trained and getting our staff trained as well, because the same training that the election inspectors get, our staff has to go through it as well on a yearly basis to keep their skills sharp, because it's always a changing environment. We've moved from to the rip-out pads to now the electronic pads. So we have to have that upkeep of training going to ensure that, you know, we are ready to go when the time comes.
And of course, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, if not all of them, know that you're a multi-term Erie County legislator.
Yes.
So that was one area of expertise, but here you are joining the Board of Elections in July in advance of a November election. How about for you? What about kind of training, trial by fire have you gone through?
Well, right now it is trial by fire with the actual election jumping off, but I've actually had the machine training, okay, inspectors class training, and I've done it always on a yearly basis just to keep my skills sharp so I understand what the nuances of what went into an election. So I've always done it as a legislator. I've always done that and tried to take part in this process. So it's kind of a seamless transition because, you know, in some aspects I have been involved from an elected official, because you want to understand what's going on inside the election poll so that as you go through to check as an elected official, you understand the nuances of what the inspectors are doing, where the information is derived from. So I've actually kept my skills sharp as well, and it's always a constant. We have an election law book, and it's about this thick. And if you can see my hand, it's really thick, over 1,000 pages.
Wow.
And it's all election law stuff in there, you know. And I can't go in there and read every piece of it, but
sure,
I pull out what's pertinent to the Board of Elections and what's pertinent to me as a commissioner to, you know what I'm looking at.
Sure, and that's interesting. Like you said, you're pointing, you had your fingers spread about as far as they'll go to show how thick that book is, over 1,000 pages. After people found out that you're on the Board of Elections now, I'm sure you're getting questions and people want to have conversation about it. What are some of the maybe misconceptions that people have, and maybe some of the questions that they have when it comes to
One of the bigger misconceptions, and we find this in the community, the minority community I did represent, is that, you know, what happens if I'm a felon or if I've served my time?
Okay.
So that's one of the bigger questions we've had. And what I would tell them is that, hey, if you've served your time, paid your debt to society, you have the right to vote. Your rights are reinstated to you, but a lot of folks don't know that.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them think, well, once I've committed this crime, I've done my time, my rights are stricken away from me. New York State is one of the few states that once you've committed your crime, you did your time, your rights are reinstated back to you, and you can re-register to vote. So that's one of the bigger things that's out there. And sometimes just pieces of the election process some folks may not have an understanding of is like the voter registration rules that, you know, that voter registration ends 10 days before the actual general election. And that was something new that the governor signed into law, Governor Hochul, when she took office, signed in the law to extend that time a little further. It used to be 2 weeks. Now it's a week prior to the 10 days prior to the election. So, you know, those are some of the bigger things that we nuances that we that I've seen as issues coming into this role.
And speaking of registration, the last day then was on Saturday. And it's interesting. I had actually a conversation with a listener about voter registration yesterday, and we found out, I think we were both kind of confused about about things, because I do, you know, you guys sent over the release about the Souls to the Polls event going over at the Delavan Grider Community Center on Saturday, and it was an opportunity to not only show up to register if you had not registered, but you can vote right there
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, same day voting, and that's issues that Governor Hochul also signed into law that, you know, made that possible. So, you know, shout out to Governor Hochul for that.
Yeah. So how did the event go? I'm just curious.
It was great. It was a packed event. Yeah. Of course, Delavan Grider was packed that day. Lines out the door. But, you know, the staff, well-trained staff, was able to handle it, get him in, get him out without any hitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it, the registration process, it's been a long time since I've registered. So it's still relatively easy?
Yeah, very relatively easy.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of partnering organizations who took the time to register to vote, and they had no issue with registering. They was able to get out there and register, you know, as I was receiving from some of these partner organizations, 30, 40, 50 people registered. They was registering at a time. So it was a great turnout to ensure that, you know, we had our citizenry registered to vote and able to participate in the election.
I would have to think for you as a former county legislator and now part of the elections board of elections, that it's got to be pretty gratifying to see new people, right? These are people who
absolutely
have not voted in recent years or maybe never voted, showing up and to vote.
Yeah, and I think that what we see happen nationally has motivated a lot of people to get involved. So I will, you know, charge it to that, you know, they're seeing what's happening nationally and they want to lend their voice to the process. And I think that's the right thing to do. I think we have to have that. I'm all for big turnouts, and, you know, because the bigger the turnout, the better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And it has been really stunning to see how many people are showing up for early voting. Let's talk about what that's like. I think over 19,000 on Saturday?
Yeah, 19,000 on Saturday, the first day. On Sunday, it died down a little bit, and we'll charge it to the Bills game. But it was 14,000.
Sure.
Monday, we had 17,000, and then yesterday was 16,500.
Yeah, right.
You know, 16,500 voters that came out. So they are coming at a nice clip of voters that's coming daily to, you know, exercise their right.
Now, the early voting today doesn't open up until noon.
Okay, it'll be noon to nine.
At all the, 38 locations here?
Yes, 38 locations in Erie County.
Yeah, plus they can come down to the Board of Elections,
and
right?
They can come down to the Board of Elections, and the City of Buffalo has 11 sites, and the others are spread out through Erie County and the towns and in the villages.
Now, so just so everybody knows, like you said, you know, you're taking time out of what's going to be a busy day for you here before the noon polls open, because now once the polls open, it's all hands on deck for the Board of Elections.
Absolutely. Hands on deck. We have folks. Like,
what's happened in the last couple of days? What have you been going through?
So what we've been doing is actually going out to the poll sites. We have some our staff that's out in the field, you know, making sure there's no issues at the poll sites, whether that be electioneering, jam machines, they run out of paper, any supplies that they need, anything of that nature. We want to ensure that we are there to address that, get it back up and running operationally, and to not my surprise, but, you know, we've done a great job in handling it at the board. We've done an excellent job. So, you know, big shout out to the Erie County Board of Elections staff. Both Dem and Republicans have been there to answer the call daily. Yes, the polls open up at 12, but you know, we're down there at 8 o'clock, you know, at the Board of Elections, ensuring that things are together there. We have a command center we have set up on site. We have poll workers. We have our staff with GPS iPads that tracks where they are. We can deploy them in real time to any facility, and we'll get the closest person there to handle any issues. And that's been the saving grace for us there, is that we've had been able to move people in real time. There's not been many delays. We've been able to address a lot of the issues, whether it's in the towns, in the cities, or in the villages. Our staff has been doing a great job.
So you were actually telling me this before we went on the air that, for example, you know, Sardinia, which is down in the southern portion of Erie County, you know, it's one thing to deal with 11 polling spots here in the city of Buffalo,
yes,
but at least, you know, you can probably be to each one of them in a handful of minutes. But you're making sure that there's somebody available in these different parts of the county,
yes,
that are going to be close by to make sure they can answer these problems.
Yes. So in the mornings, we dispatch our workers out to those spots. We let them know, hey, you're going to be on Sardinia today. Don't worry about it. You'll be sitting there, because as soon as you get there, somebody's going to be calling. And as soon as they get there, the phone is ringing and they're there to handle issues. So we have folks strategically placed out in the field to handle that. And then they can swing from Sardinia to the next bordering town or village that's close by.
Right.
So we got about 7 or 8 folks out in the field doing that, and plus what we're doing in the city. And me personally, as the deputy commissioner, I've jumped out there and I've been in the field, you know, most of the days out in the field, going to the polling places, checking to ensure that everything is going off without a hitch. The citizenry has come in. They have waited in lines without any issues.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, they've been there. No complaints, no murmuring, no anything like that. They've been there, and it's been pretty pleasant. It's been a pretty pleasant day out there.
So, but issues come to light, and you guys are quick to deal with them.
Yep.
Can you give me, yes, like an example or two of what happened?
We had somebody from the public called and said, hey, I think one of your workers are standing over somebody and it's not taken away from the privacy. And it's not so much that the worker was standing over them. It was that they were there. And sometimes folks from the public have questions.
Ah.
Other folks who come in on the scene, say, oh, they standing right there. Why are they standing right there?
So they have a question. They're filling out their ballot. They want to say, hey, can you help me? I have a question.
Yes.
All right. So that person, that worker will come over and help.
Right. And so what we do is, whatever complaint is, we're going to go to that polling location and find out what happened. What was it?
Okay.
What was it? Then we can assess it and say, well, you know what? They were there helping somebody else. That individual didn't understand that, you know, they were helping somebody,
sure,
and they weren't looking at their ballot telling them, hey, you should vote for that person. They was there to help them out. So a lot of times, I think sometimes that's the biggest issue that we find, is that folks think somebody's looking at their ballot. They're really not. They're there to help somebody. We have a lot of the folks that's coming to vote who might be a little undereducated.
Okay.
Who can't read as well.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that, you know, because of vision problems,
sure,
and things of that nature, they have some issues.
Yeah, if I didn't have my glasses, I wouldn't read that stuff.
Right,
yeah.
So they're not reading as well. So, and they can just point out and say, hey, you know what, you know, they might say, who should I be voting for? Now, we can't tell them that.
Right.
We have to tell them, well, whoever you want to. And they'll ask questions. This is a full ballot. Yes, this is a full ballot. You have, you know, our electors across the top. You have propositions at the bottom. And you have school board members on the right-hand side at the bottom. So, you know, just pointing out just small little details, minor details like that. Because we have our voters who have a lot of questions. And they want to be sure about the process. And we want to be there to help.
That's
without
right.
telling them, hey, you should vote for that person.
And interesting, you mentioned it. The board, school board is on this ballot. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first November
yes.
ballot for the school board. So that's got to add. I mean, again, you don't have the necessarily perspective from beforehand, but this has got to add a whole different nuance to things.
Yeah, it definitely does add a different nuance to it, because that didn't happen. Normally that school board election, I think, was a primary election.
Yeah.
It was in May.
Yeah.
Actually before the primaries. It was a standalone election, but they went and lobbied then Governor Cuomo signed the order to actually reduce the signature count for the school board and put it on the ballot and for November.
Yeah, so I think it I mean, it seems like it's going okay so far.
So far, so good. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Folks are filling out the ballots and, you know, without many glitches.
Yeah, because as you well know, living in the city of Buffalo, those school board races can be pretty intense as well, can't they?
Yes, they can be very, very intense. But, you know, so far, so good. We haven't had any issues or any hiccups with that so far.
You mentioned before one of the things that you're looking upon is when you come in to make sure there's no, I think you used the term electioneering. These are, you know, there are certain things you mm-hmm. can and cannot do as a citizen.
Yes.
Or as a worker, of course, inside the polling place. What are some of the things that might be flashpoints or possible flashpoints?
Campaign literature. You can't bring campaign literature inside the poll, but you just can't leave it there. You have to take it back out with you. But what you can do is wear campaign paraphernalia from a candidate inside the polls. You have to come in covered up. You can't come in wearing your favorite, I'm voting for John Smith for whatever office they're running for, your t-shirt on. You can't have that on when you come in there. Yeah. So you have to have that covered up. And then and our poll inspectors are taught, hey, if they come in with that, they have to cover it up. Or go out and turn the shirt inside out. Whatever it is, go in the bathroom, turn it inside out. Because we don't want to give that we're giving preferential treatment to any candidate. Every candidate is equal on that day.
So I guess I'm going to guess that if a certain favorite political bright red hat came in,
exactly,
you might say, please take that off or at least put it on.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You got to tell them that immediately. Hey, you can't wear that hat in there, that bright red hat in there, because that would be considered electioneering. And then outside the polls, where they have to be at the 100-foot marker if they're going to hand out campaign literature, you know, we don't want them at the front doors handing out literature as folks walk in. There's a 100-foot marker there for a purpose, so you can be there and catch the voters as they're coming in to hand out whatever candidates are supporting his literature.
And if I'm not mistaken, same with signage and things along those
same
lines?
Same with signage, yeah. Everything behind the 100-foot marker. So everything has to be placed behind the 100-foot marker. And for the most part, going to those polling spots, I've been to all the city polling locations and a few of the towns, they've been set up correctly.
So you've been out to a lot of these polling places. What's the energy like? What's the vibe?
The energy is great. It's yeah. great energy. I mean, it's great energy from the poll inspectors to the voters. Everybody is eager to get in and cast their vote and be a part of the process. So that was the bright point of the business of all the election cycle, is that, you know, folks are out, they're energized, and they want to vote.
Yeah. Have you heard from any of your polling inspectors that, hey, oh yeah, I had to tell this person to take that shirt off, that hat off?
No, and surprisingly, we haven't had many of those things. I'm sure it's possibly going to come,
yeah.
But we haven't had that so far. So, you know, it's one of the things, you know, we want to hear from. And the voters will be quick to call and say, hey, we have a hotline. They're quick to call and say, they'll call the AG's office. Or they'll call our office and say, hey, this is an issue. And if they did call the AG office, the AG office pushes it right back down to us. Hey, what happened with this? Can you tell us how this was resolved? So it's a lot of checks and balances in place to, you know, kind of diffuse that.
Okay. So, and just so we know, we come into a polling place. We have, is there an inspector on site all the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, in fact, depending on what we think the vote outcome is going to be, there are sometimes 4, 5, 6 election inspectors there, because sometimes it requires that. It might be 2 machines to every, not every polling location, but some polling locations require 2 machines. Some polling locations require 4 machines. So we put our election inspectors in there based on the volume that we anticipate is going to happen at these polling locations.
And are they readily identifiable?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
We know when we go in, that's a polling inspector.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, because they have the tag on, have the yellow tag on, identifying themselves as a poll inspector. The table set up, so you don't have to guess.
All right. But at the same time, we've got polling inspectors, and then we have the individuals who are helping to coordinate things at the tables. Totally yep. different, right?
No, they are polling inspectors they're as well. Yep, okay. They are polling inspectors.
So if
as
I
well.
Walk up, I say I'm so-and-so, I think I'm in your district, that person is also a polling inspector.
Right, okay. Exactly. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
All right.
And we have greeters, and you have a greeter at the door, polling inspectors. Now, some candidates will send in poll watchers.
Okay. Which is legal.
Which is legal. Yeah. They'll send in poll watchers to say, hey, I'm here. How many folks have voted? So, quote unquote, for the integrity of the election. But in Erie County, we don't have many issues here
right.
with that. So, you know, our polling inspectors are trained well. And at every polling location is going to be one Dem, one Republican. It should be one Dem, one Republican at those polling locations.
Right.
So if there's one machine, one Dem, one Republican, or two Dems, two Republicans. So it's going to be an offset. Right. Your counterpart is going to be there.
Okay. And just to, the restrictions are not restrictions, but the kind of rules that govern then the inspectors, they can answer questions, but I mean, there must be a fine line between what they can answer
yes.
and what they can, I want to use the word suggest, but I think I heard this once at a polling place where someone was kind of guiding somebody toward
right.
a certain,
legal.
Yeah,
right.
But I couldn't hear it quite You're enough. Right. So I guess, what kind of conversation's okay? What kind is it?
Them helping the voter out, and they have to do it in a partisan manner. So if a voter calls you over,
I gotta say, who are my choices for Congress?
Right.
Okay.
You can very well tell them, hey, you have two choices for Congress, whatever district you're in, but it has to be done in a partisan manner. So you have one Dem, one Republican there to answer the question. That way, you're not suggesting anything. You're not telling a person you should vote for this person.
Okay. All right. We're with Howard Johnson of the Erie County Board of Elections. If you're familiar with his name, he was also Erie County legislator for District 1, right?
Yes.
District 1, right, in the city of Buffalo. So it really is interesting to hear how the types of etiquette that kind of is governed in there by all these different rules and everybody's on the same page. What about for a voter? Like you said, you haven't heard of any issue when it comes to people dressing a certain way, wearing T-shirts, hats, whatever that might be, supporting one candidate. But let's talk about how they should make sure they know. I mean, everybody's got their opinion. We know that when it comes to elections. So let's just use this as an example. I walk into the polling place, and the guy behind me is talking about his favorite candidate, who I can't stand. should I reach out to a polling inspector and suggest something? How should I do
I mean,
that?
Well, if it's a voter that's talking about a candidate and he's, I mean, that's, yeah, they can say something to a polling inspector, but, you know, we are not advising our polling inspectors to say anything to them, as long as they're not bringing in the paraphernalia. Okay. Campaign paraphernalia or their
conversation
conversation is that. But if they're too loud, hey, you got to keep your conversation down to a minimum. We have other folks here who are voting. We just want to keep the integrity of the election clean.
Right. And of course, we don't want emotions to run high.
Right. We don't want
as
emotions
we all know
high.
Can happen.
Absolutely. And we just want to encourage that in a fair and nice manner.
Yeah.
And respectful at that as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you can contact the AG's office. They can also contact the Board of Elections.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hotline number or?
Yes, a hotline number. And I don't
okay, that's fine. And also but the website is what? Erie County?
Yes, it's elections.com. Erie.gov.
Yeah, there we go. So all that information is right there.
All that information is right there. If they wanted to escalate an issue or anything like that, it's right there, readily available. And it comes to us in real time. And if it comes to us, in our command center, we have it set up so when it does come in, if it's coming from the AG office, if it's coming in from a voter, you know, through the portal, we're going to address it real time as well. We're going to get somebody out there to take a look at it to ensure that, you know, we're doing what we need to do to ensure that's a fair, equitable, and clean election.
At the same time, we're hearing stories from around the country.
Yes.
You and I talked about this a little bit before we went on the air. In a couple of places, some of the early ballot boxes have
they're burning them.
Been burned.
Yeah, and I think that is just, that's the craziest thing I've heard, that
yeah.
they're burning ballot boxes, that they would take somebody's vote and say your vote shouldn't count,
right?
Not knowing how that person voted, and that's to me is insane.
Yeah, but we haven't heard anything along those lines in your county.
Here, no, we haven't. With us at the Board of Elections, we are in contact with the FBI. We're in contact with our local officials, Buffalo PD, the Sheriff's Office. Our polling locations are prioritized by the Buffalo Police. So if something does happen and a call comes from one of those polling locations, because of how they prioritize, the police is going to be dispatching, be there very, very quickly.
Voter access. This is another interesting thing. I think, I mean, as best I can tell, and I don't live in other areas, so I can't say for sure around the country, but I'm wondering if you have some insight into this. You know, here we have 38 polling places in Erie County, 11 in the city of Buffalo, plenty of places to go. It does seem like there's, and with early voting, you know, a lot of people want to avoid the election day line, so they're getting out, and we see this in the thousands. We've already talked about how many people have been out voting. But what do you hear in other parts of the country where maybe the access, the availability to get to polls is not as easy?
Or not so much that because I think that we, you know, other areas have done a good job of ensuring that, you know, folks know where they should be voting at. So I don't think that's much of an issue that we heard, as much as, you know, just the things we did hear about the ballot boxes and things of that nature, or other areas getting, you know, other boards of elections in other counties and other states receiving, you know, mail that they normally don't receive, and they do not know what's in it. Not nothing come of it, but somebody sent it in a package anonymously to make it look like it could be something.
I think I also remember, I'm trying to think which election this might have been. Kerry Bush back in the 2000s in Cleveland. You know, people were lined up trying to get in to vote. The assumption was that it was a city vote, and that they were probably Democratic voters, and they couldn't get in on time, right? So what is the rule then when it comes to the close of the 9 o'clock close of the poll on Tuesday? Is it if you're not in there to vote by 9, or how does that work?
If they're in line, let's just say they're in line.
And the lines around the block.
And lines around the block. We have to, by law, allow all those voters to come in and vote.
Okay, that's the way that works.
Yeah, that's the way that works. If they're in line and it's 9 o'clock, they have to still allow those folks to vote. We can't cut them off and tell them to come back. We have to service every one of those voters.
All right, so just be online.
Be online. Now, you know, if they come there at 9, the door is locked, then no, we're not going to open the door to let them come back in and vote.
Understood.
We can't do that. But if they're in line, there, we got to let them in to vote. And our polling inspectors understand that, and they are okay with that.
Do you have some polling inspectors who've been on the job for a long time?
Yeah. We have some very seasoned polling inspectors, someone who's been on the job 20, 30 years. They've been doing it for quite some time, and they know this process like the back of their hand. And even when we had to change from the old paper ballots,
the levers, they've adjusted well.
Right. They've adjusted well to the new technology. So we have someone seasoned, and they actually been a great source because they've been able to help, you know, train others. Because, you know, it's a lot that goes into that training class. And sometimes you may forget things, and you might not have brought your book with you on that day to be an election inspector. And it's good to have somebody who's a seasoned vet to say, hey, no, that might, you know, we'll, I can help you along through the process with that. And, you know, here's the best way to handle that. So that's always a good thing when you have some veterans there.
Right. Of course, you just joined the board in July. Anybody come up to you and take you under their wing a little bit?
The staff has been very helpful, and that's a great thing. Both sides, Dems and Republicans, have been very helpful to whatever my needs are or whatever my concerns are. Everybody wants to say, hey, did you know this? Did you know that? And they'll point things out, and I'm always happy for the information. So everybody's been helpful there, very helpful.
I'm always interested about the Erie County Board of Elections. Again, this is one of those things, you know, being in the news all the time and following it, I know that there's a Republican commissioner, there's a Democratic commissioner. I'm not sure if everybody understands that, but you've mentioned it a couple of times that that it's a bipartisan effort.
Yes.
Is it fairly collegial inside the Board of Elections?
Yes. Absolutely. very cordial, no ruckus. There's nobody, exuding their point of view as a Republican or anybody doing it as a Democrat. When we come there, we know we have a job to do. You know, you represent one interest, we represent another interest, but we both have a job to do, and that's just to have a satisfied individual when they come in to leave that place. So that's, that's the basis of it. And that's what we strive to do there.
Yeah. Do you ever think that you should be able to... Too bad we can't take what goes on at the Board of Elections and put it in maybe the state legislature or the, the U.S. Congress?
Right. Exactly. But, I mean, we'll work on that.
Okay. We'll focus on
We'll work on it and say, hey, we should be the, we should be the standard bearer for how these things operate. But there's no issues there, nothing of that nature there, nobody, there. Everybody gets along fairly well there, and, we all got a job to do, and we understand that.
We're coming down to our final moments here on the show. Let's go over just a couple of things that you want people to know about voting between now and Tuesday, and of course, voting on Tuesday as well.
So what I want them to know is that our polling locations are open up today and through Friday from 12 to 9, then Saturday and Sunday from 12 to 5.
Okay.
Sunday ends early voting. There's nothing happening Monday. Tuesday is election day, and the polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m.
And if you haven't registered yet to vote, you are out of luck.
Yeah, for this election cycle. You can register to vote, but you just won't be able to vote this election cycle, and you have to wait till the next election cycle to vote.
So compare Erie County legislator to being a deputy commissioner on the Board of Elections. What do you like?
I miss in the legislature. I miss the just the business of the county of the day.
Yeah.
Actually, the robust conversations we will have with the other side of the aisle.
Sure.
I miss that.
But you like elections. You're enjoying
it. I'm enjoying the election process because it's a lot more to learn in this process.
Absolutely.
It's a lot more to learn and to be a part of. And it's not as many robust conversations.
Nice. Howard Johnson, thanks so much for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Howard Johnson is the Deputy Commissioner of the Erie County Board of Elections. And this has been What's Next on WBFO Buffalo HD1, WOLN Olean, and WUBJ Jamestown, your NPR station.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.